You are the master of your reality. This is even more true in relation to the government. Democracy doesn't just happen. It takes participation. Governments need participation and feedback from their citizens. Join Rob Hutchinson for Dear Parliament, where you get to understand the issues and engage directly with government. Dear Parliament is every Wednesday at midday, only on 101.9 High FM.
Good afternoon and welcome to yet another episode of Dear Parliament. It's been a while since I've been on the air, and I can honestly say so much has happened. Good things, bad things, intermediate things, but generally I think pretty much on the good side, definitely leaning towards good things that have happened. A lot in government, a lot of decisions have been made. We've seen the establishment of the Government of National Union and a whole lot of decisions that have been made there. There's definitely been a great shake-up within the halls of Parliament, with decisions not resting solely on a single majority party. But that's old news. There's a whole lot of new stuff that has happened in between. But yeah, before we get on to that, I mean, there's so much to cover, especially since I haven't been on for quite a while. You know, it's kind of to catch up on everything else that has happening. And I don't know if you've noticed, but the rand does seem to be a bit volatile, up and down, more than likely due to several things that happened in South Africa, some instability in decision-making, and some insecurity from investors and from the markets, also probably based around Eskom and load shedding. Load shedding hasn't been kind to any of us. Not in our personal lives or business lives, or even to the South African rand. It's caused the South African rand to become extremely weak over the past couple of years. And as reports have shown from several investment organizations, that the rand is directly linked, or the rand's weakness and strength is, and dips and falls are directly linked to Eskom and load shedding. There has been a significant drop in load shedding lately, that's attributed to good maintenance on power stations and regular coal supplies, and I think good management overall. However, as we all know, Eskom is still asking for a 36.1% increase in tariffs, and they've applied to the National Energy Regulator of South Africa, NERSA, to apply to see if they can actually get this. NERSA will then reassess Eskom's tariff request, increase request, and then they'll probably award them significantly less, as history has shown. However, that's not the end of it. There are still more increases coming over the next 3 years, 9% and I think about a 6.8%. However, that does still bring things into question. There will still be a lot of pressure placed on South Africans and on Eskom themselves. And of course, that points to rooftop solar. I mean, who wants to get away from Eskom? I certainly did and did. And rooftop solar has fantastic advantages, especially if you can read feedback into the grid, which is actually on the cards as well for local consumers in some municipalities. You can actually push back into the grid and get and earn credits from your municipality. No cash, unfortunately, not yet. No cash in your pocket yet, just credits on your municipal bill. But hey, it's better than nothing. At least you're getting something back for it, and you are free from load shedding. So yeah, my recommendation is move towards that if you can. Other things that we can talk about, I suppose there's a lot happening in Parliament as far as public participation is concerned, which is fantastic. You know, it's really, really, things are picking up in Parliament, especially on the administrative side. Parliament has recently established a public participation unit, which focuses on public participation, and they encourage it through promoting the various bill calls for comment, holding live meetings, where you can actually stand up and attend a meeting and have your say. And of course, in written meetings, petitions, tours of parliament, and so on. So what's happening is it's promoting a greater collaboration between parliament and civil society, between civil society groups and each other, and of course, between the public, which is great. I think it's absolutely great to see parliament actually for once listening to the voice of the people. And they do, and they do. It's written into the constitution that any policy amendments or any adjustments or amendments to laws and acts have to be put out for public participation, and the public has their say and does influence, and parliament has to listen to it and has to acknowledge and consider every single person's voice. And it's great to see they are getting things ready there.
You are listening to Dear Parliament with Rob Hutchinson, because democracy doesn't just happen.
Indeed, democracy doesn't just happen. It takes a bit of work, as I regularly say, because I think I have to remind people that democracy is a full-time thing. It's not just your vote once every 4 years. No, it's, was it 5 years? It is 5 years, yes. I'm thinking of US elections now. Seem to be stuck up on that. But no, once every 5 years, you get to have your put your mark on a piece of paper. But democracy, especially in South Africa, participatory democracy, happens all the time in between elections. And it's up to you to have your say and get involved and make sure that our elected officials stay on track and deliver on their promises. But yeah, I was talking about the public participation, and I think it's a great move from Parliament, and a great initiative between Parliament and civil society. I think it all starts on educating the public, educating officials, educating leaders, and educating everyone as to the value of having your say, and that your voice, as I said before, does definitely count. There's a lot of education around it as to how you can have your say, how you can approach Parliament. You can launch a petition with Parliament, and what the process is around that. And Parliament has set up parliamentary constituency offices throughout South Africa. There's quite a few dotted in this area as well. And people should make use of these offices, because Parliament is actually assigned members of Parliament to each office. So members of Parliament have to go into there, have to address their constituency, and have to perform their constituency duties. And that's actually starting on Friday. I think Thursday is the final day in Parliament for this session. The National Assembly goes into their constituency period right now. And it's a great opportunity for you to contact your representative or your member of parliament and see where they are during this constituency period. The constituency period goes right throughout December and up to January, and the members of parliament are supposed to be engaging with their constituencies, which is you and I, of course. But as I said, education plays a great important part in this all. And there's been a considerable amount of controversy lately around the Basic Education Laws Amendment Act. It used to be the Bella Bill, and now it has been signed in by the President, and it is now the Bella Act. Once a bill gets signed in by the President, it then becomes Act and is promulgated into legislation. So what has happened here? There's been quite a civil uproar about Bella, and particularly around two clauses in it, clause 4 and 5, which talk about the language policies that schools have to adopt, and also around homeschooling, registration of new learners, and a whole lot of other issues which civil society does not seem to be too happy with at this stage. So what has happened, according to the presidency and the Minister of Education, is that an agreement or a settlement has been they have reached a settlement, although we're not quite sure if it is actually a settlement, but there will be more on that shortly. I'll be chatting to Rebecca Liebenberg. She is a quite active in the homeschooling community, has made several presentations to the Minister of Education and to various bodies around Bella, and she has a lot to say and a lot of insight information as to what's really going on. Do we have a 3-month grace period, as the president has said? Do we not? What is the settlement? Is it a settlement? What is actually going on? And Rebecca will join us pretty soon. I'm hoping that she will be. She definitely will be joining us. Let me see if we can actually get her on the line. And before that, let's see if you can join us after the ad break.
You are listening to Dear Parliament with Rob Hutchinson, because democracy doesn't just happen.
Welcome back after that brief break. And as I mentioned, on the line, we have Rebecca Liebenberg. Rebecca runs a homeschooling operation with many, many, many subscribers, has actually sent quite a few proposals and submissions through to government, and has actually had several meetings with the Minister of Education all around the Bella Bill. Rebecca, great to have you on. Hi, Rebecca.
Oh, yes, I can hear you. Rebecca. Something happened. Back. Hello.
Technical issues, as always.
I could see you talking, but I could hear nothing. I'm sorry. I don't know where we are.
Hi, Rebecca. Yes, I was just telling the listeners about how you have sat in front of Parliament, sat with the minister, and have actually done quite a bit of work on the Bella Bill, or which is now the Bella Act. Why don't you take us through a bit of what you've done, what the process was, and so on, and maybe just highlight around what this the issues with Clause 4 and Clause 5 are, those issues that civil society in general seem to be have raised as problematic.
Okay, thank you, Rob. Yes, for about Clause 4 and 5, that's basically the admissions policies and the language policies, and those are for schools. So technically, they're not really a homeschooling issue. And for my part, I have been mainly involved in anything to do with home education, which is what I will take you through what I've done. I haven't had any dealings with our new minister because that's all very recent, but my involvement became pertinent because I was a homeschooling mom, and when I realized that the policy on home education was a problem for homeschoolers, and then the Bella Bill which was released was going to basically solidify that problem and make it a brick wall that we will find ourselves slammed into eventually. That is when I started my personal civic responsibility campaign, let's call it that. But my support group that I grew on Facebook had grown very large. So I think this is why I ended up accidentally getting into the limelight. It's not something I sought out, and it is basically because a bunch of us parents wanted to do something. So we did, and we did it in our own very sort of layperson home style manner. And what we did was we wrote to government at each of the junctions when, you know, they would invite us to become part of whatever process they were allowing us to participate in. And herein lies the problem. The homeschooling community have only been afforded participation rights at those points in time when the Department of Basic Education deemed it relevant. And, you know, according to the participatory democracy in our country, we are supposed to be the stakeholders and the role players, because it is us that the laws apply to, and it is our children who are going to be suffering the consequences of any laws that could be disadvantageous to them. So from the homeschooling perspective, our problem is actually what we know as Clause 35, the homeschooling clause. This was signed into law by the president, and this was not party to the three-month negotiation period that they allowed for Clause 4 and Clause 5. Clause 4 and Clause 5 is about going to school. It's a public school application, and that is to do with the admissions policy and the language policy, which most of us homeschoolers actually agree with. We as homeschoolers don't have an issue with mother tongue language instruction in the school, so we're quite okay with it. But we do sympathize with that situation for parents who are having their kids in school, because from the homeschooling perspective, we have seen how the Department of Education and the government in general take the interpretation of the clauses in the Act to new heights, let's put it that way.
Yes.
They interpret it in ways that is not actually the spirit of the clause, the Act, the regulation, whichever it may be at any given time. So this is where the problem comes in, and why I think there is such a huge public outcry, because the admissions policy and the language policy of the schools used to always be administrated by the governing bodies of the schools, and now this is no longer going to be the case. It gives the Department of the Education officials so much power that they can override any decision-making process that the schools might have for themselves, and which the schools need to have for themselves in order to protect the safety of the school, the integrity of the quality of the education, and of course to service their community.
Oh, okay. So it's the school governing bodies, because that comes up quite often, is that the school governing bodies are now losing complete power. And some people have actually raised concern that, you know, what's the point of a school governing body in SGB when government can just step in and overrule everything that they say. So that it is a major concern. Could you possibly explain what school governing bodies can do in terms of clause 4 and 5, or maybe just on the language policy itself? Is it regional, and what will happen now if government does get control over that?
Well, it is going to be regional in terms of the provincial education departments, because they are allowed to make regulations. They will obviously do so in conjunction with the minister, but they will be able to change the application of those clauses, the admission policy as well as the language policy. They will be able to change it according to what they deem necessary for the community in an area of a school. So if, for an example, an area becomes the people who live there change, maybe a hostel is built, or there is immigration issues or something, there's a huge change in an area, the schools in those areas will have to cater for the children that end up in that area, which makes sense. But if there is an inordinate amount of children needing to go to school in that area using a language as their mother tongue that is not the language of the schools who have been established, this actually does give the government a right to superimpose regulations onto that school to change that school completely, which means that the children that are there at the time and the parents who are involved and the teachers who are teaching will be disenfranchised of what the status quo has been up until that point. And, you know, I get that is a legitimate problem that would need to be catered for, but isn't government supposed to cater for the public when there are changes by building new schools, by training teachers, and by providing the education? Our main problem is, why are they taking the existing infrastructure and repurposing it without actually providing tools for that infrastructure to even do so. So instead of actually building up schools and making it possible for these children who might have flooded the area due to whatever situation and they need instruction in their own language, instead of the government expanding on the infrastructure and providing for those kids, they are dismantling current infrastructure. So they're going to disenfranchise children who have come to rely on that to provide for other children who do need it, but they're not providing actually. They're just doing so on paper. And what actually happens is the schools become decimated in terms of nobody can use them at the end of that.
Absolutely.
So that is the reality, unfortunately.
It sounds horrific. I mean, if you've been attending school, if you're a learner, you've been attending school for a number of years, and say it's an Afrikaans school, and suddenly, as you say, there's an influx of immigrants or just the dynamics change as they do in society, and then suddenly the majority is say Zulu. Then would the government say enforce Zulu onto as the main language policy of the school, despite what
they might,
which again, you have a problem now, because then what happens to the Afrikaans learners, and now they have to mainly be educated in Zulu. How would that work? And that is, I think, that's what you getting at. That's quite a problem.
Well, the extension to this problem is I suppose it's partly the homeschooling community, but not really. It's the group of people that take matter into their own hands and then they create infrastructure. They have traditionally used the homeschooling banner, which is why I presume I know about them. But I mean, it's not really in my personal circle of home education. But they would open up little private schools to cater now for those children. So if something like that happened, the school was disenfranchised, the language policy changed, their parents would get together and say, okay, fine, we don't have a school anymore for our kids to learn in their mother tongue. Let us get together and open a new one. And in this instance, the law allows for this, but the DBE has been going out of their way to prevent things like this from happening. I know it sounds very much like conspiracy theory stuff, but it does seem to me that the Department of Education is working together with the government to prevent the expansion of infrastructure for all languages in this country and all children from grade R to matric to have access to education, simply by refusing to allow the infrastructure that the citizens are providing, from allowing them I'm getting calls now, to actually open up schools and do what they need to do.
Yeah, no, that is, yeah, so that is a
where
problem.
Where does that leave us? What do we do?
Well, exactly. That just says, well, school education must go private and step away from government, which in itself brings problems, mainly to people who can't afford private
exactly
high schools.
Yeah, exactly. This turns education to an elitist realm where only those who have money and who have legal representation, and only those children who have perhaps a two-parent household where the parents are also very engaged, only those people, those children, are going to be the ones who are going to actually have an education and be able to thrive in it. And it precludes anybody who is perhaps an orphan or who is living in a poverty situation or who has immigrated or who has disabilities of certain kinds. None of the people who've got difficulties in life are catered for in terms of infrastructure for education by our government. And the general theme of the entire bill has been to change the administration of all things education to make it look like the government will be able to provide infrastructure and improve access to education for an entire diverse country like we are. So it looks like it on paper, but on practice it's not able to happen because they don't have the capacity to do it. They haven't prepared for it. As you see, they're still fighting over the clause 4 and 5 and the settlement that's been reached. And it seems that the DA, the media, the ministry itself, and the president are all speaking on a different plane. I've been listening to everything I can on on YouTube because I don't have TV, so I watch all the YouTube bits, and none of it is fitting. Billy Oakham from the DA spoke this morning about how this new agreement is binding on everybody, but what's his name? Zoli from the news team, he spoke about Lisa Theftal and how she was saying it's only binding on the parties, which is Nedlac and the minister. So
yeah, there's so much confusion.
There is so much confusion. Yes, that's the word, confusion.
Yeah, that is. But that seems to be the general thing around Parliament. And I think the Government of National Unity, the GNU, there's going to be a lot of infighting and a lot of difference of opinion. And as you said earlier, an incredible amount of misinterpretation of what the Act actually says, simply because each person has their own agenda. I know there's been a lot of talk about the Bella Bill and the GNU, their feeling about it and how the GNU is going to approach it. And it does seem to be that it has one agenda, while the ministry has a different agenda. There's been quite a few reports or media reports on that. So general confusion all around on the Bill. And I see, I mean, the agreement, well, let's not call it an agreement. It's as they have termed it, a settlement to award 3 months to deliberate over clause 4 and 5. What is all that about? Or let me rephrase that. What are the intricacies around that? Is this actually a settlement? Does it have a lifespan? When does this 3 months begin? When does it end? And so on and so on. But let's take a quick break first, and we'll definitely chat to Rebecca after the break here.
You are listening to Dear Parliament with Rob Hutchinson, because democracy doesn't just happen.
And welcome back to Dear Parliament, right here on 101.9 High FM. If you've missed the show or missed the beginning of it, don't worry, you can catch a podcast on our website at www.highfm.com. That's chaifm.com. And back to you, Rebecca. Before the break, we were chatting about the settlement, and what is the settlement really about? Is it 3 months? Is it a settlement? Or what's going on? Tell us a bit more.
Well, I would love to know what the settlement is. We are all scratching our heads. That's a million-dollar question. It's been signed, apparently, but what exactly is it? I've been searching for information about this, and apparently it's a legitimate document, and you know, the who's who has all signed it, and they all are apparently party to the settlement, which is, if they're party to a settlement, doesn't that kind of make it an agreement? But yeah, we don't know. So I would personally like to see what the settlement or agreement is in writing, and I would like it published somewhere, because it affects me as a parent. If I had children that I wanted to put into school, I would be a stakeholder, surely. Mm. And if there is a settlement reached on behalf of the legislation governing what's going to happen to any education my child receives, I need to know about it. So quite frankly, what is happening in front of us is hiding in plain sight, as they call it. It's something that's going on, but we don't actually know what is going on. They need to be a lot more transparent. It would seem to me, from what I can glean from the media, and I don't trust the media very much, but anyway, this is what I understand from the media, is that the minister, together with Solidarity, under the guidance of Nedlac, have reached an agreement / settlement that says that in the application or implementation of clause 4 and clause 5, there will be aspects about that, the interpretation and implementation of it, that the minister will be able to take to the president and make note of in terms of any concerns that they might have, or grievances or negotiations that they might need to open up. So it sounds like they've just opened up a window or a back door that will allow further negotiations to take place on an ad hoc basis as situations arise. So to me, that says that when schools are going to be closed down and the community in that area does not kick up a fuss or does not have too much of a concern about it, they will let it slide. But where the community stands up against a situation and formulates something official and takes a memorandum maybe to the minister, the minister can take that and say, well, according to our agreement through NEDLAC, I can now petition the president to deal with this matter and you know, make them do something about it that will please the community or appease those. It's going to be a situation, whoever shouts the loudest will be given some attention, and those who don't will suffer whatever the fallout of clause 4 and 5 will be. That's my interpretation. It's personal. It's not something I've heard anywhere. If I'm wrong, I'm very sorry, but that is kind of how I think it might go down.
I think you're 100% correct, because whatever I found is points in exactly the same direction. They've given three months for further deliberation, further discussion around clause 4 and 5. But again, it's quite vague. What will happen with those discussions? Will it actually amend clause 4 and 5? Will we see another bill amendment? Amendment bill? Then there has to be. There has to be at some stage. Otherwise, it's all just a smoke and mirrors.
Well, no. No, there doesn't have to be, because worked into many of the clauses of the bill is verbiage that sure, I don't know how to put this without incriminating myself. There is use of words in the Bill of Bull that will allow the minister to make regulations, and yes, those regulations will be seen as law because she is now authorized to make legal regulations.
Yes. Yes.
Subsequently. So it's almost like and as an afterthought. It's like a gym contract. You know, they can update the terms yes. and conditions. And today you have a new fee that's for maintenance because they forgot to fix the sauna for 6 months. So if you are paying R700, now you might just get a bill for R900 because now there's maintenance fees. But you signed 2 years ago, so there's nothing you can do now. Yeah. So it to me it feels like a bit of a scaly deal. I'm not impressed with what the government's done with the billable. There are so many wonderful things that could come from the billable, and it would have been very easy throughout the process of participation where people raised all their concerns. It would have been very easy for the DBE, and in fact both houses of parliament, to say, okay, this clause is not exactly watertight, it's a bit vague and it can be interpreted two ways. Let us actually say what we mean, because they really went to huge efforts to say this is what it means. They would write about it, they did presentations and all sorts of things on what it means, but they refused to write down what it means, and that to me is a huge concern. Yeah. If it means that you are able to go to a school even if you are a child of an immigrant and you don't have residency yet, then why don't they say so? There's all sorts of funny little things written around the actual concerns that we have that are not very pertinent to each specific situation. And you know, they've been writing this billable and tweaking it for 10 years. So you can't tell me they haven't had the time or that they don't want to make the document too long, because long documents don't seem to be a problem at all.
Never with government, no. Oh, way too long always. But you're 100% correct. And the minister, on any act, once it's gone from a bill to become an act, the minister has full powers to draft the regulations, without any consultation, without any public participation or
anything else.
Any notification. The minister can do that. Occasionally, the regulations do go out for public comment and public input before they are actually put into the legislation. Hopefully, this will happen as well. I'm assuming that these deliberations that are going to take place within the 3 months will go towards drafting adequate regulations, which
I don't think so, because
I'd be pity
it's almost over now. No, yeah. But I mean, we've only got 9 days left.
Is it only 9 days left?
Yeah, the 3 month negotiation period started from the moment that the president signed the bella into law, and that was on the 13th of September.
Wow.
So by the 13th of December, that's our 3 months up. And during those 3 months, I assumed that within the next week, AfriForum and Solidarity would be in meetings with the ministry and the president. But everybody went off to a different country to do some sort of other political thing, and nobody was around. So we waited and waited. And as far as I know, unless I am not well informed, there hasn't actually been a proper sequence of meetings between the government and either of the organizations to even talk about this. So they sort of put a pin in it. I think looks like it's they're buying time for something. I am concerned that there is a possibility that there would be a time limitation in which the stakeholders and role players and other interested parties to contest the signing of the act, you know, like your cool down period for a contract. I'm unfortunately not very au fait with the laws on that kind of thing, but if there is a time period in which we have to actually contest this, that 3 month period left the billable in a sort of a twilight zone. It was in abeyance for a while, but does that mean that it stops the clock of the time limit, or does it pause it, or does it still continue, and do we still have recourse at the end of that 3 month period when it is now said, okay, the billable is full and final, it is an act? At what point can we go to court? Because the homeschooling community have got some very serious qualms about the clauses that affect us. And we were not included in this 3 month standoff, which we should have been, because quite frankly, we had a greater civil reaction to the homeschooling regulations than the clause 4 and clause 5. I was at 5 of the public participation meetings, and I was very fortunate to be chosen to speak at almost every one of them. I don't know, maybe they just liked what I was wearing, but I was able to talk every single time. But what was very strange for me is every single one of the video feeds, except for one, in Tembisa, every single one was cut just before I was going to speak. So all of my public record of speaking at the public participation hearings doesn't exist.
Oh, that's crazy. That's crazy.
Yeah, which is sad for me. But I basically kept saying the same thing. So it doesn't really matter. And we've written in, and there's been a lot of parents. But for the homeschooling part, we are not happy about the process of registration. It is a faulty process, and it incurs costs on the homeschoolers, and it also automatically criminalizes us in a few ways.
Absolutely, it does. Rebecca, we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll catch up afterwards.
You are listening to Dear Parliament with Rob Hutchinson, because democracy doesn't just happen.
And welcome back after that. And thanks, Rebecca, for chatting to us about such an important issue. And I think we could actually talk for hours on this, and perhaps we should have another catch up after the closing date of after the three month agreement. Any final words on that? And yeah, I'm particularly interested in this homeschooling challenge that might come up. How does the public actually get more involved in that?
Well, the involvement phase is over. The public can't really do anything else now other than follow what is happening. We are hoping that the DA will stand true to their word, and they gave the homeschooling community many assurances that they would, continue to be a voice for us. Bax Ndodla, I think his name was, he was in Parliament, was really a particularly vocal champion, as well as Marie Sukas from the ACDP. So the DA and the ACDP really did a lot for us in terms of bringing our cause to the public platform and give us a voice, but nothing really came of it. So the next step that I am aware of is the Pestalozzi Trust, who is the legal defense fund in South Africa, are planning on furthering this and taking it to court, and they are formulating their case. The public can just basically follow, and where there is any opportunity for anybody to say something or do something, they must please engage. Just look out for any opportunities for engagement.
Fantastic. And there you have it, listeners. It's all about engaging and participating in everything. Thank you so much, Rebecca. We'll definitely chat very soon. We'll get a bit of a catch up as to what's actually happening, and looking forward to chatting to you again. And listeners, thank you for tuning in to 101.9 High FM. If you missed the show, once again, have a look on our website at www.highfm.com. And remember to stay democratic, engaged, active, and responsible. Ciao for now.